Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. As you probably know if you've listened to American Variety for a while, we're partial to explorers. It's getting hard to find unexplored places these days in the U.S., but sometimes a particular journey is so extreme that in itself it's an exploration. And my guest today made such a journey and lived to tell about it. He and three companions spent the summer of 2013 riding a string of nearly wild Mustang horses 3,000 miles through the American West, all the way from the Mexican border to the Canadian border. He's written a book about it, and a film is also in the works. His name is Ben Masters, and the book is titled Unbranded. Welcome, Ben.
Hi, good morning, Court. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on. So what possessed you to do this? How'd you come up with this idea, and what's behind it?
Some friends and I at Texas A&M University, we got tequila drunk and thought it'd be a good idea to get a bunch of horses and ride them from Mexico to Canada. So we did.
So the whole idea was just strictly fueled by Cuervo, by tequila.
Well, that's not completely true, but you know it does kind of have a tendency to get things jump started. You know, I spent a couple summers in college working for different outfits out west, dude ranches and outfitters, and doing an extended horseback trip, something I always wanted to do. So I approached some friends in college that had similar working histories, and you know, a couple tequila shots later, this idea was hatched, and it was kind of just an idea at first, and as we looked more and more into it, we decided to take a leap of faith and actually adopt some horses and start doing it.
Wow. So you're not long out of college. You went to Texas A&M. I think you're a wildlife biologist, right?
I did. I studied wildlife biology.
Yeah. So you're, I think, probably in your mid-20s. And it is great to be in your mid-20s and be that free. Just say, hey, guys, let's ride some horses from Mexico to Canada and see what happens. Crazy. Ben Masters. Gosh, if you had to give a name to a cowboy in a Western novel, that would be a good one. Did you grow up with horses? Have you been, you know, in rodeos? Have you been a horse guy all your life?
No, I grew up in Amarillo, Texas, which is horse country, but I didn't really be around horses until after my freshman year of college. I got a job working for an outfitter in northern Colorado. I called him and told him I'd shovel poop until I learned how to ride and got it figured out, and then I started doing trail rides and pack trips for him in Rocky Mountain National Park and just kind of fell in love with it. But no, my first horse experience was only, about 7 years ago.
Wow. You really hit the ground running then, so to speak, or at least trotting, I guess. So.
Yeah, I didn't have enough experience to realize how ridiculous of an idea we had.
like they say, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, right? So,
exactly.
Who were the other drunken fools? I mean, your other buddies who went along with you on the trip?
Two adrenaline junkies. Well, I've done it twice. The first time was in 2010, and that was with a friend that I worked with in Colorado and another buddy from Texas A&M that I played, we rode polo horses with. And then the second journey is the one that you're referring to, this unbranded ride where we did a documentary and a book and more publicity about it.
So I have to say, you sound like a real laid-back, easygoing Texas guy, young guy. But I've looked at this book, and it is really beautiful, and it's full of great photography, and the story is really compelling. And I've looked at the trailer, and we're going to tell people in a bit how to look at the trailer online for your movie that's coming up, and it's really well done. I mean, so somebody is a writer and a photographer. Is that you?
I did most of the writing in the book, yes, and most of the pictures were mine.
Wow. All right, so I think you're modest because you appear to be from the products, a pretty talented guy who's got a real good idea of what he's doing and is organized and able to present himself really well in these different formats of a coffee table type of book and a film. Well, let's turn a little bit to the trip and the planning for it. How did you get the horses? You know, I'd read that you had some quarter horses and then some of these fairly wild, barely broken Mustang horses. How did you get the Mustangs?
We actually used all Mustangs
on
the journey. you know, one of the things that we wanted to do in this big trip or this idea was to show people that we have a huge problem of there's 50,000 wild horses and bros that are literally sitting in pens and are, you know, costing like $50 million in taxpayers. And a lot of these horses are great. They're really good horses. Some of them are. So for our trip, we went and adopted some of these wild horses to use. And they'd never been worked with before.
Yeah.
So we got some two professional trainers in the Dallas area, Jerry Jones and Lanny Leach, and they helped us train the horses. They put the first 30 days of training on them so that whenever we got them, they weren't totally wild. They had been worked with a little bit. And there's actually a really cool program called the Mustang Heritage Foundation, which sets people up who want a wild Mustang, but they want one that has 30 days of training on them, because it kind of takes a little bit of the wildness out of them. You can actually walk up and touch them and put a halter on them.
Sure.
And they're a lot more safe to be around, because taking a completely wild horse and training it from day one is a skill set that not a lot of people have. It's tough.
Yeah. So,
and it's dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you know, with your limited experience with horses, had broken these wild Mustangs. So I'm glad to hear you didn't try, because they'd have probably broken you.
Yeah. So we spent the first 3 or 4 days in training with these professional trainers. I've been around a lot of colts. I've been around a lot of younger horses, but I'd never been around, or I haven't spent a lot of time around completely wild animals that had never been touched. And there was this horse that was tied up, and he was the calmest of the lot. And I walked up just really calm and let him sniff my hand, and then just reared up and just punched me right in the shoulder. Like, oh, yeah. What have we gotten ourselves into?
Oh, yeah. Must have been your cologne. I don't know.
I mean, I was. He was just scared, I just pushed him too far and too fast. So, but it was definitely a wake up call of, these are wild animals and they are dangerous. After that, we didn't have too many bad events in the training.
One wake up call was enough, since it almost left you unconscious.
Right.
All right, well, back on the planning of the trip, how did you plot your route? I mean, you're going all the way up through the country from south to north. How did you have to go through, you know, Google Earth and detailed topographic maps and figure out every mile all the way? And, you know, were you trying to stay away from civilization as much as possible? I mean, what was your overall strategy in plotting where you went?
Well, we did, Court. We wanted to find the most backcountry route left in the American West to go from south to north. That was also feasible for horses. 95% of what we went through was public land, whether a national forest or national park, BLM land, state land. I think, I want to say the statistic is there's 700 million acres of public land. I mean, just huge amounts of open space out in the West where you can just go miles and miles and miles and never see a fence, never cross the road. I mean, it's awesome how much just open land there is out there. So we bought individual state maps. Then we looked where the big public land chunks were, and then we bought individual maps of those public land chunks, and then we connected the trails. So before we started, we had everything pretty well mapped out, along with some alternative routes and GPSs, and we did about 8 to 10 days at a time, and then we would stop and rest for a few days and resupply and then continue on the journey.
So did you have to get permission from BLM and other government agencies to cross that land, or is it just open to the public if you're on horseback?
Everything that we went through was open to the public. There were some few areas of high traffic where we had to get permits to camp at nighttime, you know, like Grand Canyon or Yellowstone, just because there's so many people, you have to have permits. But for the most part, most of it, you can just go and explore. You don't have to have permission of any kind.
Good. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking here with Ben Masters, who's joined us from Texas, to talk about his trip with a few other young guys on horseback, actually on the horseback of recently broken and barely trained wild Mustangs, through the entire length and breadth of the U.S. from the Mexican border up through the Canadian border in 2013. And he's written a book about it called Unbranded, and a film is also in the works. So, Ben, even though it was a trip through wild country, it must have cost a considerable amount for a bunch of young guys. You mentioned having to buy supplies and so on, and of course you've got, you know, saddles and GPS and cameras and all of that stuff. How did you fund this trip?
The horses were $125 because there's so many of them. They're pretty much giving them away, so that was not a big expense. But you're right. I mean, to do that by yourself, you know, probably budgeting it out, you're looking at $10,000-$12,000, all said and done. And then we also wanted to make a documentary, and we wanted to make it good, and you got to have the proper tools for that. So we used a online funding source called Kickstarter, which you have an idea, you make a short video, you put it online, and you ask people to donate to what you're doing in order to make it happen. So we made a Kickstarter video and told people what we wanted to do and how much it would cost and why we needed the money and what we would use it for. And in 45 days, we raised over $220,000.
Wow.
From, over 1,200 people from Kickstarter and outside donations. I mean, it was crazy the amount of support that we got to make the journey, the trip, the book, the entire thing possible. It was awesome.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that wasn't just people who wanted to contribute to your summer vacation, but I suspect it was people who bought into what by then I think was your mission to kind of publicize the plight of wild horses out west and to help the Mustangs, right? So I think that I'm guessing that you've got a lot of contributors for that purpose. And I'm going to say this a couple times, but if people want to look at this trailer that Ben's mentioned, it's really good, and it gives you a great idea of what the film itself is going to be like. Go to their website, which is unbrandedthefilm.com, unbrandedthefilm.com, and you can do that while you're listening to the show if you want. So let's talk about the trip itself. Now, you had a pack string, and you had more horses than you had guys, right? So did the horses that weren't being ridden carry the gear and supplies like pack animals, or how did that work? Or do you have donkeys, or what did you have?
We had 14 horses and four guys and usually one cameraman with us. So we did have a lot of extra horses, and we had one horse to ride, one horse to pack, and then pack food, tents, horse food, etc. And then we had an extra horse that we just let go free. So if any of our horses showed any sign of getting a saddle sore or they were tired or whatever, we could give them a day off and they could just follow without having to carry anything, which I think was really important in keeping our horses safe.
Sure.
And then also we had some extra horses for the cameramen. And then in Utah, Ben Thamer, one of the guys that did the trip, he was talking to a BLM employee about the donkeys, and the BLM guy said, well, I'll just bring one out and it can go with you. So we did have a donkey follow us all the way from Utah through Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana.
Probably woke you up every morning, hee-haw, hee-haw.
Yeah, she was really loud, but I mean, just an awesome donkey, super affectionate, and she ate everything. Like, there were no leftovers. This donkey was awesome.
Well, did you take the time to pitch tents every night, or just rough it and use sleeping bags, or how did that go?
On nights where it didn't look like it was going to rain, we would just sleep in our bags, but we did have some pretty stout weather as far as rainstorm and thunderstorms go, so we definitely carried tents because you got to keep all your camera stuff and whatnot dry.
Stout weather, I like that phrase. I was going to ask you that. Did you run into, you know, really severe weather like hailstorms, lightning storms, and things that kind of had you wishing you were in a hole in the ground or anything like that?
Yes.
Yes, short answer. Well, I mean, what happened? Was there anything that was really super scary or just made you nervous?
Oh, man, I mean, we got snowed on, we got rained on, we got iced on, we had some thunderstorms. But all said and done, overall, it was not that bad. We got pretty lucky that summer, and we did not encounter horrible weather problems.
Well, snow even in the summer, so you must have been at a high elevation at that point, huh?
We did. It was actually in Arizona in April. It was about 100 degrees midday, and then we started climbing out of the Sonoran Desert up this mountain range, and we ended up camping around 9,000 feet, and the temperature just plummeted, and we're all sunburned and hot, and then 4 hours later, we're getting snowed on and getting all of our stuff all wet. So
that's crazy.
We didn't know what to think.
Wow, that's wild. What was the food like? Who did the cooking? What did you eat?
The food wasn't very good. Ben Thamer was the cook. And, you know, with what he had to work with, the meals weren't bad. But usually for breakfast, we'd have trail mix, you know, granola bars. And then for lunch, we usually had Snickers and beef jerky. And then for dinner, we'd have usually, like, rice and some kind of meat mixed in a tortilla with lots of hot sauce. We did carry a Dutch oven, and I'll say Ben Thamer, he learned over the course of 5 months, he made some really good cornbread. Or maybe we were just really hungry, but it tasted great.
So it sounds like you brought along all your food. You didn't try to live off the land at all, huh?
We ate some fish, but for the most part, we did. We brought all of our own food. We did it in 2013. It's not like you just go around shooting deer and stuff.
Right. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Ben Masters, who led an expedition in the summer of 2013 to bring attention to the plight of Mustang horses out west. And they rode some recently broken and barely trained Mustangs from the Mexican border up to the Canadian border. There must have been plenty of tense moments, Ben. You talked about the weather some, but what are some of the other dangers you encountered? I mean, did you end up on cliff faces with a trail a foot wide and figuring, is my next step going to be my last? And what kind of stuff like that went on that stands out in your mind?
I think the most tense moments were, the rough terrain that we went through with horses. You know, we had 14 horses, and almost everything that we went through is in the backcountry on small trails. And, you know, you can do a ton of research, but you don't know what it's going to be like until you're actually there. And we did have a lot of places where the trails were really narrow and really steep places where falling off was just a very bad possibility.
Yeah.
Going through the Grand Canyon was really a scary experience. And then, you know, we had some pretty big rivers that we crossed, and also a lot of snowpack. You know, you get up really high early summer, and we were going through snowfields that were sinking our horses and sinking ourselves, and it was just really tired. But,
wow. But
yeah, the steep trails, that was the scariest part and the most dangerous thing for the horses and us.
How'd the horses do? Did any of them get crazy on you?
Yeah, they did.
Give me an example.
I mean, we had this one horse, gray horse. I love him. He's beautiful, but he just kicked everybody. and, you know, that hurts.
What about, like, then, you know, did any of them rear up and try to buck you off or flop over and lose your gear and, you know, any kind of thing like that?
Oh, man. Tom got kicked in the leg. I got kicked in the butt.
Ooh.
Our director, Phil Baraboo, cameraman, he got kicked right in the thigh, like a solid blow that took him out of commission for 3 weeks. Thamer got dysentery. He also got kicked in the face.
Ouch.
By a horse.
Gee.
Johnny got bucked off into a cactus patch. Yeah, I mean, you name it. But surprisingly, we didn't break any bones or any, like, life-altering injuries, thank God.
Didn't lose any teeth or anything like that?
No, we didn't leave any teeth on the trail.
Well, apart from being black and blue, you guys probably got a little tired and testy out there at times, right? So did tempers flare among the four of you at any point?
Yes. I mean, any time you spend 5 months of confined time with only three other people, you're going to have disagreements. And then we were making a lot of serious decisions on which way to go or whether to turn back, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that had lives and people's health on the line. So, yeah, absolutely, we had tempers flares at times.
Were you the leader? I mean, was there one, you know, unquestioned leader, or did that kind of shift around, or were you just basically democratic about it, or what?
We tried to make decisions as a team for the most part, but as far as logistics go and you know, the main decision maker, that was me. But, you know, we tried to do everything as a team.
Yeah, ideally you'd agree, yeah. Did anybody get sick, like, you know, dysentery or that kind of thing?
Famer got dysentery in Arizona. We don't know how, possibly from questionable water or bad food.
Hmm.
And that took him, he had to go to the hospital and get a bunch of fluids pumped for about a week or so before he's able to come back. But it did. It took him a long time to recover completely.
So you mentioned your cameraman, and you were evidently doing a lot of filming as you went along. Was that hard to manage? I mean, maybe the most interesting parts to film were the parts that were also the trickiest and most dangerous in a way, you know, the thin paths and narrow paths and all that stuff. So was it hard to, did you have to kind of redo things that you'd rather only have done once? You know, how did that work, the filming part of it?
The filming aspect of the trip was difficult. We learned early on that we needed professional cameramen, well, before the trip even started. So we brought along mainly two of the best outdoor adventure cameramen on the planet. And they weren't horse people, but they were backpackers, they were campers, they were skiers, they were really outdoorsy and in really good shape. And they did a phenomenal job of filming on the trip. You know, Phil Baraboo, the guy that I keep mentioning, that the director of Unbranded, he was the mastermind behind all the filming logistics, and he did a phenomenal job on the movie. He just really impressed us as a cameraman, but also as somebody that had to go on the journey and pull their own weight and ride a horse and do all that. We lucked out big time.
Yeah, if you watch the trailer that Ben's talking about on the website, unbrandedthefilm.com. Name of the film, of course, is Unbranded, but if you watch that trailer, you'll see it's a really professional job, and I was impressed. I was thinking you were the filmmaker, and I was thinking, my gosh, you know, this guy can do a lot of things here. So that explains it, that you had professional people doing that, and that was a good choice, and they clearly did a good job. You can see it in the trailer. But I asked you before about, you know, some of the tense moments and the things that were kind of scary, but there must have been plenty of memorable things about the trip that were really just great, right? So what are a couple of those really standout moments that you can think of?
I think the one that really sticks out to me is definitely the hardest I've ever laughed in my life was I have this beautiful paint horse, Luke, and I was fishing one day, and the fish just kept rising in the lake further than I could cast. So I just went and saddled my horse and rode out into the lake and started fishing on him. Anyway, super broke horse, awesome horse. And we're out there chest deep in the water, and I actually hooked this trout. And just watching his reaction of watching the line in front of his face and then the fish come pop out right in front of him out of the water,
yeah,
it was pretty hilarious. I laughed really hard. You know, the fishing, that was, you know, one of the highlights of getting done and then being in these beautiful places and then going and getting lost in a river and fly fishing.
Yeah.
And then the sights that we saw, unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, things that the average tourist never ever sees, and maybe the last person who saw him might have been a Native American 100 years ago or something, huh? So, And there must have been some great sunsets, and, you know, the stars at night are big and bright deep in the heart of Arizona or Colorado or wherever you were. So there must have been just some natural sights like that that were really outstanding, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. The scenery that we went through was insane. And then just the amount of it. You know, I don't think people realize that doing something like this is even possible in the year 2015.
Really?
But, I mean, we would go days without seeing a road or a power line. And it's not – and going through just magnificent country with mountains and big valleys and rivers and lakes and just these incredible public land spaces that, you know, people use but I don't think a lot of people really comprehend how much is out there. And I know I didn't. That was one of the things that surprised me, is how wide and open the West still is.
Yeah, you can see it when you fly over, but being on the ground, it must really have a big impact on you. So just have a minute or so left, Ben, but when you got to the end of the trek up there and next to Canada and went back then to normal life, whatever that is, was it a letdown? Was it hard to adapt to not doing what you'd been doing for the previous several months?
I don't think it was a letdown. I think it was definitely different. You know, I really missed the camaraderie, the lack of self-service, and the lack of being so plugged into normal life. But, you know, since the trip is finished, we've been involved editing the movie, writing the book, and trying to really press the publicity of these wild horses that need homes. So, you know, it's been different. There's certainly a lot of things that I miss about the journey, but I also still spend a lot of time with my horses in the mountains. Mm. So I don't think I'll ever do another trip for that long, but I'm really glad that I did it.
Yeah, that's great. So quick question, when do you expect the film to come out?
We are going to premiere our movie, Unbranded, on April 25th at Hot Doc Film Festival. And then we have a lineup of film festivals that we're going to go to this spring and summer. And hopefully we'll have it in theaters this fall, in select theaters, and have DVDs and on demand before Christmas time.
Sounds great. Okay, so it'll be around for general consumption in theaters around the end of 2015 then, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, again, to learn more about the trip and to see a trailer, go to not only the website, but there's a Facebook page, facebook.com/unbrandedthefilm. Or, again, the website is unbrandedthefilm.com, and the trailer is on both of them. There's different kinds of information on both of those sites. The book, Unbranded, is published by Texas A&M University Press, so it's, you know, it's a serious book, and the it's a great coffee table book. It's a really beautiful photography in there and descriptions of what Ben Masters and his crew did. So, Ben, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.